Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bridging the Gap with Chief Barnes. I'm your host, Chief Sean Barnes of the Madison Police Department. The purpose of this podcast is to bring perspective to the field of policing, which is often a black box to many communities. Our department aims to bridge the gap between the police and the community we serve in order to increase trust and legitimacy in the Madison Police Department. We will be conducting interviews with stakeholders and decision makers regarding a variety of topics which affect public safety here in Madison. We hope you enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bridging the Gap with Chief Barnes. I'm your host, Chief Sean Barnes. I'm the Chief of Police for the Madison Police Department. I have two very, very special guests with me today on this episode three. We're calling The Tale of Two Chiefs. It was the best of times. We'll leave it at that. Chief Noble Ray is our guest. He served as Chief of Police for the Madison Police Department from 2004 to 2014. And Chief David Cooper served as Chief of Police for the Madison Police Department from 1972 to 1993, a record of over 21 years of service, which I don't think will ever be broken. You think that's going to be broken, Chief Cooper?
Well, they'd have to hire another young person who was entirely unknown about what they were going to walk into.
And that leads me to my first question. When you took over as Chief of Police in 1972, did you know what you were walking into? And tell us about that time.
Well, my city manager actually warned me. I was a public safety director. That was also fire chief and police chief of Burnsville, Minnesota. And I said I was interested in going to Madison. And he had done some work for, I think, the McGovern campaign back in those days. But he said, Madison, you're going to have your hands full. And then the other foolish thing I did was came here on the famous 1-4 vote. It was Tom Stevens, who was transportation director, and Oscar Myers thought that I should be the chief, but four other people didn't think so. So over a process of through the year of 1973, became 4-2, and then came like 4-3, and finally became, 4-2, it became that that I had three votes of the five. And so, well, that's sufficient to go forth. And of course, I was expecting that after I came here that the commission would come together and say, okay, we'll cast a unanimous vote, let this poor young chief have a good start here, but they didn't. And so the 3-2 vote within a few months became 3-2 the other way, two people in favor of me continuing chief and three people not, over some internal politics about who was going to get promoted. So there the game began for probably a good 6-7 years of really intense nastiness until we finally got some stability. And, everybody thought, well, I said, if you'd left me alone, maybe I'd left after 4 years and gone to a bigger city, but you guys caused all this trouble. I guess I got to stick around.
Yeah, you're fully invested now. One of the things that we talk about a lot here in the Madison Police Department is resilient leadership. You know, we think that, serving at any level in public safety is easy, but it does require a certain level of resiliency. And Chief Ray, you started with the police department here in Madison back in 1983. And so you saw the progression of the police department through the leadership of Chief Cooper. And at some point you decided that you wanted to take that leap and become a chief of police. What do you remember about that time?
It was an interesting time because, in policing, things were really moving and changing. That was the onset of where people were starting to talk about community policing and what does that mean. And that was the engagement of where communities were starting to take control and to have an input in what took place with a law enforcement. I grew up just very quickly in the inner city of Milwaukee, ground zero for the civil rights movement. So I knew people like Jesse Jackson, H-Rap Brown, Angela Davis, before I was age 12. I met those folks. I was baptized by Father Grappi, who, if anyone knows Wisconsin history, they'll understand what that means. So when I came to Madison, my folks did not want me to join the police department. But when I came to Madison, and when I sat in the room and I had an interview with David Cooper, I was so impressed. He was a very soft-spoken man. He went right to the point, but in back of him was a picture of Dr. King, and that meant something to me as a young man growing up in the inner city. Last thing I'll say is my wife and I bought our first home, David, who he's always changing and doing a lot of different things, he came over and blessed our home. My mother was there, and she said, "That is a good man, convincingly good man." And so he inspired me in so many different ways to want to be a leader and want to not only be a leader here in Madison, but to be a leader across the United States in the field of policing.
Wow. Chief Cooper, do you remember that photo of Dr. King? And I guess, why did you select that? Why was it important to have that image?
Well, I picked those up in 1969 when I went to Burnsville, and I had them back of my wall, two pictures, one of Dr. King, very large poster size, and one of Mahatma Gandhi. And the caption under Dr. King's photo was, "No man is free until all men are free." And the caption under Mahatma Gandhi was, "In a gentle way, you can shake the world." And so those kind of became my companions. So they hung behind my desk for 25 years.
Absolutely. And, you know, not without controversy.
Yeah, that's right.
Both.
Yep, that's right.
And as you began to create your police department, as you began to impart, and I think our job as chiefs of police is to really set the vision and then move people toward that vision, and sometimes that's difficult. How did you measure success as you went along? I mean, that's a long time, 21 years. Like, what are some things that stick out to you as successes and things that, you know, the Madison community was made better because of your tenure?
Well, I think the essential thing to put into place so that the stuff about community policing and treating people with dignity and respect can come into play is the players. And so we had to change the complexion of the Madison Police Department. When I came here, about 250 officers, we had one officer of color. He was a black man that was raised by a white family. And we had seven women, police women, who worked just in juvenile. The women had to have a four-year college degree before they would be hired. They could not carry a firearm, and they were prohibited from seeking promotion.
Wow.
So you've got a perfect storm just ready to happen right there. One woman chose to step up to the rank of lieutenant, and she eventually rose to the highest levels of the department. And we started recruiting people of color and women as uniformed police officers, which only a few years prior to that time, the President's Crime Commission and the Task Force Report on Police never considered that women could possibly be police officers and working in uniform. And what changed my mind was after I got my graduate degree, the University of Minnesota gave me a grant to look at police in Europe. And I went to Stockholm and Copenhagen and Hamburg and London, looking at police in those cities, and found, amazingly, women working in uniform. Sometimes they'll pair just two women working a patrol beat. And I came back to the country with that image. And I think unless I had that experience, that travel experience from the University of Minnesota, you know, I would be probably locked in the idea that this is an all-male job because it's always been an all-male job. So why would we want to change this?
Yeah, you said something very, you know, wow, very powerful. One, you spoke about community policing, but you also spoke about the importance of having a worldview and the importance of how if you're going to be successful in this police business, you have to see what other people are doing and that they're doing successfully. One of the things that we do here under our administration is we try to send people to trainings and, most importantly, to conferences all over the globe so that they can get a different perspective and bring that perspective back to Madison. And you mentioned trying to implement community policing, something that, you know, I have a community policing expert sitting beside me and Chief Noble Ray. During your time here, how did you define community policing and how did you make sure that that legacy of community policing, which we still try to impart today, is sustainable? And even some people, maybe you want to give a definition because some people think it's a buzzword. I think it's more than that. I think it's a philosophy. What do you think?
Totally agree. Excuse me. It is a philosophy. It is not something. When I first started embarking down this path, you know, I was really into what I refer to as trust-based policing. And I was thinking externally. And what I realized, again, you evolve in your career, is that trust cannot happen outside unless it happens inside. You have got to take care of the people that take care of the people. And that is the men and women that serve this community. And trust is not something, what's difficult about it is that it's a subjective thing, but it's something that you have to constantly work on. It is something that you have to engage with people, talk with people. There's a push and pull from most police chiefs across the United States of do you support me internally or do you support the people externally? And I think both of those two things can coexist, but it is a very difficult challenge for police chiefs, police leaders across the United States to be able to make sure that they are balancing those two things and that there's not like this kind of jealousy. Oh, chief, what about me? You know, internally or externally, citizens, what about me? So what I tried to impress upon was this idea of trust and putting the language in behind that. It was so critical. And I remember David asking me, he called me up one day and he said, what about this trust-based policing that you're talking about? And my response to him is that it was an evolution of something that he started, and that was the quality leadership movement inside of the department, that how you judge people, how you think about people. And so I'll throw that back to him, give him an opportunity to talk about. But I thought it was an evolution of something that he started.
No, I think that's great. You know, there's a lot in that. I heard a quote recently that says, your employees will not care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Absolutely.
And so you talk about that. But you also talked about trust. And I'm going to throw this over to Chief Cooper. When I went through my process, one of the questions was, what will you do to establish trust? Mm-hmm. Not to reestablish trust, not to keep trust. Why are we still talking about trust in policing 30 years later, Chief Cooper?
Well, because when you lose it, you know. And one way to measure trust when you lose it is when they start burning down your police stations, you know you've lost trust, a la Minneapolis, a la George Floyd. That's exactly it. And police departments don't realize that they've lost the trust. And we say, I think Noble and I talked about this, we've got to have a bank account here of trust.
Yes.
That is, we've done enough things to the community that's most impacted by police, that is people of color and poor people, that we have enough in the bank there, so when we don't do very well, we'll be given a chance to fix this without burning down one of our stations. And I think that you cannot police a democracy effectively without having the trust and confidence and support of the people whom you police. That's the basic tenet right there. And when you lose that trust, the only thing you can do in response, because you still have to do your job in sort of policing and law enforcing, is force. Then the force goes up because the people will not cooperate with you, so you have to threaten them and use force against them.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about doing your job. Neither one of you can answer this, because I'm gonna flip it just a little bit. So, you know, been doing this job for a while. Community policing, doesn't that make police less safe? That's not real policing. Community policing, you know, we have a big budget. It's one of the biggest budgets in the city. Shouldn't we be spending that money to do something else? Isn't someone better suited to do this community policing stuff? Shouldn't we give that money to someone else? What do you think about that?
Well, I've always thought police as generalists, and though it's nice to have health workers working with police, that's a stopgap measure until you get police who are mental health workers, because that's what we do. We handle people in crisis, most of the time in mental crisis or some type of altering drug is involved here, and that's this kind of scene that we come on. So I think that, you know, having officers who are educated and preferentially have a baccalaureate degree and have a little bit of perspective make better officers. And changing the gender balance in a department, there's a new thing out, like 30 and 30, right?
It's 30 by 30,
yes. We're going to have a national movement amongst police. You know, 30% women in by 2030. Well, we did that years ago. You know, I think I left at 25, Noble upped it to 30. Yeah. But I think the movement should be 70-30.
Wow.
70% women, 30% male. And we would have an entirely different police organization just by reinforcing one side of the gender scale there.
You know, one of the things that I thought was just a horrible way for this country to go in, and that was the debate on defunding the police.
Okay.
Because, Sir Robert Peel talked about this. The police are the community, and the community are the police. And that may not sound like great English, but that's what it should be. It should be this ever-flowing connection between what the community does and what the police does, and it should be interwoven. More police is always not the answer. But you do need good, hardworking people, as David mentioned, to be able to deal with the crisis. You know, as someone who has walked the streets of Madison, I know at 2 o'clock in the morning that there is someone that may end up with a mental health crisis, that someone has to be there to maintain that situation in a very supportive, helpful manner. And so I'm not one of those that says, well, you know, you don't need police. Yes, you do. I think police serve a fundamental support for this community, because if they go by the fundamental principles of service, justice, and fundamental fairness, that is the bedstone, the hard rock of policing in America.
Sure. And I would say even more so, good police hold a community together.
Absolutely.
Because they are the action people of the values of the government.
Yeah.
Those are the people who are out there. So when you talk about defunding police, that was a real bad argument to get involved in. I ended up talking to some officials in Minneapolis. I said, seize the day. You call this reimagining policing. Let's get the community involved in this thing and everybody talk about what kind of police department you want, what do you want them to look like, act like, be trained. Why don't we start with that? And that got lost by the wayside.
No, I think that's extremely important. I agree with that 110%.
And President Obama's task force, it just like flew by the wayside.
Yeah, it flew by the wayside, you know, because I think, you know, it should have been tied to money. And, you know, if you want our federal grants, if you want – participation. You have to be working towards these principles because some people don't do them voluntarily. And you mentioned that report, and part of that report was working with the International Association of Chiefs of Police. And I was fortunate enough to work on Pillar 6, which was officer safety and wellness. But something happened during that time when the president, Chief Cunningham, at the time in San Diego, he attempted to reset police. And we're talking about trust in community policing. And he apologized on behalf of police to marginalized black communities for some of the things and where policing missed the mark.
Yeah.
It didn't go over so well with everyone. There were memberships, people who canceled their membership and didn't think that was the right thing to do. What do you think about that?
But that's what we do. What police do, unfortunately, is we're organized and targeted to keep black people out of white people's neighborhood. And I'll say that very bluntly. That is the nature of the force and the direction of policing. And so apology is certainly a very appropriate thing to do. You know, we've got it wrong. We can do much better. There was years and years and years that we didn't have any police officer in the country who was a man or woman of color. I mean, this is like new stuff. And when we have things like the 1619 report saying that it shouldn't be read by people, I mean, that's simply wrong. We have a legacy of racism in this country, and it is what it is, and we can overcome this if we work together on this. But by denying it, we'll never get there.
Could I add something?
Absolutely.
And I don't want this to go missed. First of all, Chief Barnes, it is fantastic that you're having this conversation with us today.
Thank you.
And the reason why I say that is something that David really implemented within the Madison Police Department, and it is called continuous improvement.
Yes.
And so I never looked at my job as saying, well, you know, I've got to throw out everything. I want to continue to improve. And what I see that you're trying to do is that you're trying to take some of the things that was implemented in the past and you're trying to continuously improve. That's the way I look at it. Now, if you travel across the United States and you talk to chiefs of police, if they're not engaged in their DNA in continuous improvement, you'll see it in their department. They're going to keep continuously bump up against it. So I want to applaud you for not only having both of us on, but this ethic of how do we constantly improve was critical, and it's part of the Madison Police Department's DNA.
It is. And
let me chime in too and say also, okay, me too, okay. All right, back to you, Chief.
No, I really appreciate that. That's one of the things that I saw when determining to come here almost 3 years ago was that this commitment to continuous improvement. And I think that core value that you established so many years ago, Chief Cooper, is important today. I look at these dates, 1972, so I wasn't born yet. But during that time, look
You're
at
that much younger than I am?
Not yet. I wasn't here yet. But you think about so much that has happened and where we are today. We have school shootings that have really increased for really no rhyme or reason. Everyone's looking for a solution. Some people say more guns, give them to the teachers. Some people say less guns, take them away. But it may be a little bit too late for that. Small arms survey out of Switzerland. I know you read it. Almost 800 million guns in America. It's too late now. We also look at police brutality and things that we see that pick at the fabric of our community. We see things like active shooters, governmental misconduct, mistrust in government. You know, I think that sometimes when we see social disorder, it's really not about police so much as it is about a distrust in government. We just happen to be the most visible form of government. You don't know the person who has not allowed your street to be fixed when they see you in a grocery store, but you know me, I'm wearing a uniform. How do we be better? Just be better.
Well, you know, we have a history of gun control in this country, a really positive history. As I recall, some of the tales out of the West is that if you're the sheriff at Dodge City, and the cowboys come in from the roundup, you'd say, okay, boys, you can come in here and drink and you can dance with our dancing girls in here, but you've got to check your guns over here at
that's true.
Because that's kind of dangerous, have you boys in here with those guns and this alcohol.
Yeah, yeah, that is true.
Yeah. So how can we have learned from that?
Yeah. In my office, you know, I have a picture of Billy the Kid. You've seen that. So I love what my favorite movie is, High Noon, Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly. And if you watch that movie, it's about a law enforcement officer who needs help.
Yeah.
He goes to the church.
That's right.
He goes to his deputy. His deputy says, well, you didn't promote me. So you're on your own.
I mean, they were like that then?
Yeah. Yeah. He goes everywhere. Yeah, he goes to the politicians who say, just leave it alone. We don't need the bad press. Yeah. And if you ever get a chance to watch that movie, please sit down on a Saturday with some popcorn and some water and watch that movie from a law enforcement perspective. And it will really
Let me throw one more movie in there. 12 Angry Men.
12 Angry Men. That's the original.
Fonda. Back in there is how decisions are made. And I really like that you're talking about servant leadership, because that's a big part of what we were trying to do. You know, and both of us being a couple of ex-jarhead brains here, there was Al Gray was the commandant of the Marine Corps, and he went to the U.S. The Naval Academy, and he was trying to recruit the graduates to come in the Marine Corps. And he said, if you join my corps, your number one job is to take care of the men and women you are privileged to lead.
Wow.
You are privileged to lead.
I love it. Yeah. Shout out to all our Marines that may be on here, all our servicemen and women. We know what that sacrifice is like. So I have two questions left for you. The first question is, you know, what do you want to say to our Madison community? You know, the reason I created this podcast really is to bridge the gap. You know, policing has often been a black box where community members know that, hey, if I call 911, someone will show up and probably try to solve my problems, or they may show up and may take someone to jail. I don't know. I don't know how that decision is made. What's the difference? And so I try to bring different people on to get different perspectives so that people know, really, I think we have a great police department. We're working extremely hard to be better than we were the day before. But two questions. One, you know, what do you want to say about policing or the state of policing to someone who may be listening to this because policing has been a black box for them? And after we do that, I'm going to ask, what's next for you? What are you working on? How do you spend your time? Tell me how horrible retirement is and all that other good stuff.
I'll just quickly, I think what people don't really understand at times is that policing can be a lonely profession. 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, when that officer is out sitting in that squad car, thinking about the next call and where they're gonna go and how they're going to get there and how they're going to serve and protect this community, it can be lonely. So we need, as what you guys have talked about, we need the community to engage and be part of supporting us in that movie that you talked about. You know, you're not alone. Yeah. Police officers should not feel as though they're alone. So I'll just end with that one, and then
we'll get the last
yes.
one. All right. What do people need to know about police work?
Well, first of all, let me make a recruiting pitch. It seems like departments having trouble bringing people into the police department. And This is the time where good men and women step up and serve. It is a great job. It is really being a person that can make a difference, being able to help justice and mercy in a community is a tremendous job and a very important one. So good people need to step up, and you know, just like we did back when we were doing hiring, we went around to some of the churches in Madison, send us your best people, because we want to hire them, and the community responded. It's a great job, and it needs the very best. We should have the very best men and women in our community should be serving as police officers here.
Absolutely. And Finally, I'm going to do you last, okay, Chief Cooper. So I'm going to go to Chief Ray.
Is he going to retire?
I don't think he will. He looks too young. Yep. So what's next for you? What are you working on nowadays?
I have dedicated my life to dealing with issues related to reform. And what I mean by that is the disparities in and African Americans being arrested, being incarcerated. I think this society can do better. And so there's so many facets of that. That is reentry. That is what happens in policing. That is implicit, explicit bias. There's so many facets to this. And so I will continue to do that type of work and travel the country nationwide to ensure that we are reaching an understanding as to how to reduce those rates of disparities.
Outstanding. I have in front of me David Cooper's passing observations, poems about life, love, death, and other things. I also have in front of me Arrested Development by David C. Cooper, which is now in its third edition, The Colors That Divide Us. So we know you're busy writing, and I know you're involved in the clergy. What's next for you? What are you doing these days?
Well, as the psalmist says, unless the Lord keepeth the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. So that's kind of what I've been working on since 93 when I had this call to go into ministry. So I've been 17 years at a small church between here and Milwaukee, an Episcopal church. And all of a sudden, I've got another call in November. And the call was, you've got to help this young Lutheran pastor out who's starting a new idea. They went and bought a school in Mazomani, and they want to make it a community center with a worship area there. I said, wow, we talked about that 15 years ago, and this is going to happen. So I have taken on, I am the associate pastor. I'm no longer number one. I'm number two, and I'm really enjoying this exciting opportunity, and I'm thankful that I have most of my mental facilities and physical that I'm able to do this. So I'm just, I'm excited about this.
All right.
And well, I'm about to celebrate next week my 85th birthday.
Ah, well, happy birthday. Happy birthday, sir. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. This is Chief Barnes with Bridging the Gap with Chief Barnes. And thank you so much for being on, Chief Ray and Chief Cooper, for sharing your thoughts with us, and join us again for another podcast as we attempt to unlift the veil and let our community know how much we care about them and the work that we do here at the Madison Police Department. I certainly want to thank everyone who was involved in this podcast, specifically the men and women of the Madison Police Department, both on our commission and our non-commissioned side, for all of the hard work that you do every single day to keep Madison safe and to make the Madison Police Department a national model for exceptional policing through our commitment to selfless public service, effective community partnerships, and evidence-based policing practices. Thank you. See you next time.